So good to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's featured guest, top money manager Louis Nevelier. Louis Nevelier runs Nevelier & Associates. He's the editor of four leading stock advisory newsletters. Welcome back.
It's an honor to be here.
Well, thanks. In your latest Nevelier & Associates report, Market Mail, you examine the market leadership. And let me let you run with the ball and give people an idea of this rotation you see in the market.
We're still in the midst of what we like to call a seismic shift. And what that is that's where the top end of the S&P 500 and much of the leadership is sick. And that's what happens when a strong dollar destroys your profits. Almost half the S&P sales are outside of America. So what's been happening is the S&P sales are now flat as a pancake, and many multinationals have negative sales growth. And their earnings are up 1.4 in the first quarter, but that was only because they bought back a tremendous amount of stock. They would have been down without the buyback. So the market has gravitated to anything that has real sales and earnings. When the S&P doesn't, that is largely domestic stocks. That's Kroger, that's Southwest Airlines, that's Target, that's CVS Health, other healthcare companies like Anthem, United Health Group, Cigna. You know, it's also Lowe's, Home Depot. But there's more domestic companies in the mid and small cap arena right now than large cap arena. They're doing better. All I can tell you is the other day the market was down 108 points and we were up with literally over 100 stocks in a very diversified fund. So stock picking is absolutely crucial now. Obviously tech, healthcare, some consumer durables, consumer staples are the strongest sectors, but I'd rather be picking stocks and sectors right now. It's a pure stock picking market.
Anyone who follows the markets can recognize when the Fed is tightening, you know, rates are going up, the market is stagnant for the most part. But when rates decline, we tend to have a rally. And, you know, it's interesting that just as the Fed eased up and started to loosen up and become more dovish was right around 2009. And here we are flatlining since 2009, you could say 6-year rally at least. But with higher rates, if we look at this track record over the past, it tends to not bode so well over the next few years. Do you see that impacting the markets, or are things so robust here in our domestic economy that they'll just shrug off higher rates?
Well, like most things, it's compound complex. Obviously, what we're all watching is the incredible surge in bond yields in the last, actually since the beginning of April. I think last I looked, the 10-year Treasury was 187 at the beginning of April, and hit 2.5 here recently. But the German 10-year bond went from 5 basis points, 0.05%, to over 100 basis points, 1%. So the question is this resurging economies around the world? Is it due to the Greece conundrum that they're all getting nervous over there? Because Greece is obviously going to have another managed default, most likely. They've made a couple payments to the IMF and they'd like to make another one, but then restructure everything else. And of course, they have the problem in Greece. There really is no leadership. They're at the point where they have to cut their pensions because they can't tax their way out of this mess. At least that's what the IMF recommended, who's, you know, basically driving the bus. So it's interesting. We've had a lot of very good economic news for the second quarter. The first quarter, although it was negative, it was held back by the West Coast port strike. Consumers were cautious first quarter, but, you know, based on retail sales coming up a storm and business investments going up, you know, we've depleted inventories in the last three quarters, so they have to rebuild inventory second quarter. So second quarter GDP is shaping up to be really good. Going back to the Fed, their conundrum is there is no inflation, so they don't really have to raise rates to fight inflation. And furthermore, Janet Yellen's a labor economist. And although we had a very good May payroll report in January, February, March, they revised payroll down. And the reason they did that is most of the jobs are creating in America are temp. And when some ambitious person gets two temp jobs, they get counted twice, so they have downward revisions. There were also problems with the household survey. So the job market is not hitting all cylinders. You've had multiple people from the Fed say they shouldn't raise rates, like Stanley Fischer, the vice chairman. He says because of the weaker global growth. You've had the presidents of Chicago, New York, Boston, Minneapolis also they shouldn't raise rates. I think the most telling thing is Janet Yellen is not planning to be at Jackson Hole, Wyoming, for the Kansas City Fed conference in August. And now everyone in the world that is a central bank or economist goes to Jackson Hole. First, nice place, great time of year. Janet Yellen will be conspicuously absent. I think she's going to be hiding. The IMF has told us not to raise rates until next year. Of course, next year is an election year, so they don't want to raise rates anyway. So I'm in the camp that they will not be raising rates in the next 2 years. However, I did hedge myself, and I was on CNBC the other day saying if market rates go up, we'll be forced to follow. But market rates have not gone up on the short end. So as you mentioned, this week's Fed minutes are going to be fast.
It could be a one-and-done scenario where they just simply save face. We've done it, raised rates, and they may not even give any guidance. It might be one-and-done, and we don't find out about that until, you know, spring of 2016. You know, if this were an option, it would be decaying rapidly. I think it's interesting that you're the first guest on our show to point out the, as you say, conspicuous absence of our Fed chair at the Jackson Hole, Wyoming annual meeting, because this is a key, a seminal event in the economic world. I mean, quite an honor, so it's kind of surprising not to see head of economics, the global leader. But I'd like to get a few more thoughts here before we move on. This Greek situation, it's setting a precedent. Nevertheless, the economy is tiny, and it's roughly 3-5% of the entire EU. So what are they really worrying about? I mean, do you think that this is maybe a smaller issue, a non-issue, compared to the way the press is framing it up?
The bottom line is we in America have our own issues. We have Puerto Rico, we have the state of Illinois. And the easiest way you fix a lot of these issues is you just make the stock market go higher. Obviously, it does trickle down eventually. Obviously, a lot of the pensions in America are tied to the stock market. I think the Fed is purposely goosing the stock market. You can just tell in the buybacks. You know, last year, they bought back $904 billion between buybacks and dividends. So they returned $904 billion to shareholders. In the first quarter, was $247 billion in buybacks. That's almost $1 trillion a year. Last I looked, the stock market's only worth $20 trillion. So when you're buying back 5% of your float a year, that's just incredible. The other thing is when you have low interest rates and low PE ratios, companies continue to borrow to buy their stock back. Clearly, the multinationals that have the sales problem can borrow overseas extra cheap, as Apple has in the last couple quarters, and just continue to retire their stock. This stock market has been going up on no. It's eerily silent. I think buybacks and cash flow are a big thing. And one last point, the market yields 1.9%, and it's tax advantage at 23.8%. So if you're a wealthy person, you can put your money in the bank and earn 23.4% taxes and be taxed at 43.4% and get next to nothing. Or you can just buy the stocks and get a higher yield and a tax advantage rate. So I think the foundation of the market is good. I think we need some better leadership. It's coming from domestic stocks. You know, the third and fourth year of a presidential election campaign are very good for the market because all these candidates are starting to see that now as candidates emerge, and it'll be full force next year. The final comment I'd have is when Yellen went in front of Congress, I think it was 4 months ago, Senator Schumer was begging her not to raise rates. There is going to be immense political pressure not to raise rates. And that's just because of the student loan crisis and all kinds of other issues. So interesting conundrum we're in, but as long as rates remain low, the market melts in.
I'd also add that we haven't discussed the dollar rally, an important component of that multinational scenario you laid out. I mean, obviously, as our dollar is relatively strong on a global basis, it tends to curtail their sales and make us a bit less competitive on a worldwide scale. So it's another, I think, key point that could be capping some of those S&P gains. However, this lower energy situation with crude oil, obviously at some of the lowest levels in years, that clearly can be an impetus for the economy, especially in summertime. You know, it tends to boost spending and whatnot, and not to mention consumer spending.
I think it's my opinion the dollar remains strong till our rates are as low as the rest of the world. We have Japan pumping, the European Central Bank pumping, money sloshes in America. My kid goes to some fancy school on the West Coast. Lots of Asian money coming in, moving here, bringing capital. I live on the East Coast. We have lots of Europeans, Russians, other people bringing in, buying real estate, putting capital. This is what negative rates does. Negative rates forces people to act differently. So we see them buying condos in Miami, sight unseen, 650 a foot for a concrete shell that you have to finish out. We see them buying cars. We see them buying art. No one wants to have an asset that's depreciating, and cash is depreciating. Now, going back to metals, gold was the best performing commodity last year. If you were an American and bought gold, you know, you were treading water. You were a European and bought gold, you made money because your currency went down. I don't know. If I lived in Europe, I think gold would look pretty good right now because of the it's priced in dollars, so I get that currency tailwind, and I'd rather have something I can trust versus central banks just pumping relentlessly. So it's an interesting time we're in. Of course, the more uncertain it is, the more people should have in gold, platinum, things. So we've been encouraging people up their allocation.
Any contact information you'd like to leave with listeners, or perhaps just give us an idea, an overview?
Well, I think the main thing is our research is online, available free through NavalierGrowth.com and Grader, as well as the Stock Grader. It's it's called Portfolio Grader. Grade your dividend stocks and dividend grader and grade your growth stocks on the portfolio grader. That's again, NavalierGrowth.com. Our research is free. The main thing is in January, only the top 22% of stocks were worth buying. Today, it's only the top 14%. I know in the S&P, the top 50 stocks in the S&P, only 18 are any good. 12 are growth stocks, 6 are dividend stocks. So narrow market right now, actually 12 are growth stocks and 4 are dividend stocks. So that gets us up there. But yeah, I can tell you, very narrow market environment right now. It's either you own the creme de la creme or you suffer. And I think this is where we are. I think the market will broaden out and get better because we'll have some good economic news in the second quarter. But the leadership is very, very narrow. So you have to own the creme de la creme here. Index funds are not safe, okay? They are cap-weighted, cap-biased, and the dollar is destroying indexing. So the folks in McGraw-Hill keep the S&P 500 are probably starting to get real nervous.
We had Ralph Acampora on the show last week, and he pointed out, you know, we haven't had a 10% correction in our major U.S. equities indices several years, and we're due for a 10%, and that wouldn't necessarily equate the end of a bull market. It would just be a natural, you know, speed bump on the way to higher prices. Are you also in that camp that the bull market likely has further to run?
The S&P has not had a correction for over 1,331 days, the last I looked, probably 1,340 days now. But we did have a pretty serious correction in October of last year. I still remember October 9th, they hit the semiconductors 12% that day, and then they came roaring back, got good earnings announced. I remember them hitting the airline stocks as we were all going to be dead from Ebola in 60 days, and they took off. A little more volatile now. And this is what we call rotational correction. This is the best kind of correction. The other day the market was down 108 points. I was up even in 100 stock portfolios because especially semis and data security firms like Palo Alto Networks, Fosco Data Securities, a lot of health stocks are acting really well. There's merger mania underway. It's going to be fine. It's only the market rotates. The other thing is any market gets hit, all the bargain hunters come out. The market yields more than the bank, so there's a lot of people chasing yield. I think we're going to be fine. We do have these high-frequency systems, though, that do manipulate the market to a certain degree. What goes up today tends to go down tomorrow. So you just have to kind of get used to it and realize that it tends to seesaw a little higher today, and that's what's going to happen. But, you know, like I have a fund I manage. I never buy stocks when they're up. Never. I mean, I wait. I take powerful stocks and only buy them on down. That's how I do things.
You know, I mean, this doesn't leave a lot of alternatives for the typical portfolio, so you should see capital flows following this 30-year bond market rally steadily directed into U.S. equities, as also Ralph Acampora pointed out. So it's just maybe another piece of the puzzle to keep people from getting overly concerned by any shakeout by the weak hands.
And the good thing is America is an oasis. Foreign capital is pouring into America. We're getting all these people bring their capital. They pay taxes. I mean, this is a really good thing. So we're going to grow our way out of our problems. You know, we got an election coming up.
Louis Navalier, we always appreciate your thoughts. Please keep up the great work. And I want to encourage everyone, if you haven't signed up for any of these services, try the free market mail. And that way you can get started. It doesn't cost you anything. You can see some of the great information and advice that you'll receive. Make a decision from there. So let's get started. The market mail is your first step towards getting some great advice. Louis Navalier, thanks so much.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Check. Here is your mining quiz for the day, compliments of GoldSeek. Which company has the largest undeveloped gold reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold. Now, which company has the largest undeveloped copper reserve in North America? Seabridge Gold again. Seabridge has more gold reserves than Kinross, Yamana, and Agnico Eagle. Last year alone, Seabridge added 515 million tons of new inferred resources containing nearly 6 million ounces of gold and more than 6 billion pounds of copper at their giant KSM project in British Columbia, Canada. Now they are drilling at KSM again with multiple rigs in a 25,000-meter program. Find out more by visiting www.seabridgegold.net. Traded on the NYSE, symbol SA, and the TSX, symbol SEA.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.